These are the top stories. Poland proposes an armed international peacekeeping mission for Ukraine. This after the prime ministers of three NATO countries meet with Ukraine's president. Iran's foreign minister rejects the U.S. claim that Moscow is blocking a deal at the Vienna talks, expressing hope that the White House would drop its own excessive demands. And a senior member of Yemen's Supreme Political Council says Saudi Arabia cannot be a mediator in the Yemen war, as Riyadh is the main party that started the aggression. Welcome to the program. The prime ministers of three NATO countries are in Kyiv to support Ukraine amid its ongoing conflict with Russia. The leaders of the Czech Republic, Poland, and Slovenia arrived in the Ukrainian capital by train and met with President Volodymyr Zelensky. They will also meet other Ukrainian officials. Polish premier, says Ukraine has the unequivocal support of the European Union. Warsaw favors an armed NATO peacekeeping mission to provide Ukraine with humanitarian aid. The risky trip marks the first visit by top foreign officials to Ukraine since Russia began its military operation there on the 24th of February. Kyiv's mayor has also announced a 35-hour curfew amid heavy attacks on the capital.
Today is a difficult and dangerous moment. According to the decision of the military command, from today, March 15, from 8 p.m., a curfew is established in Kyiv. Movement through the city is prohibited without special passes. You can only go out to reach a shelter. The curfew will apply until 7 a.m. on March 17th. Therefore, I ask all Kyiv residents to prepare for the fact that they will have to be at home for 2 days, or in case of an alarm, in a shelter.
Ukrainian officials say at least five people were killed in Russian strikes on Kyiv. Authorities said a convoy of supplies for the port city of Mariupol was struck at a nearby town. Meanwhile, Fox News says a second journalist working for the network was killed in the incident. An unconfirmed report suggests 19 people were killed in a Russian airstrike on a TV tower in Rivne, western Ukraine. The UN says 3 million people have so far fled Ukraine, over 1.8 million of whom arriving in neighboring Poland. Kyiv sounds optimistic about the ongoing talks aimed at resolving the conflict between Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine's president says the position of the two countries in the negotiations is now more realistic than before. Volodymyr Zelensky, however, believes more time is needed for the two sides to reach a peace deal. Earlier on Tuesday, an advisor to Zelensky said the negotiations process was very difficult and slow, but a compromise was within reach. He said with the fundamental contradictions remaining between Kyiv and Moscow, the discussions will continue Wednesday. In recent days, officials from both sides have expressed hope for a peace agreement in the next few weeks. The EU and UK have approved a new barrage of sanctions against Russia over its military offensive in Ukraine. The EU sanctions include bans on investments in the Russian energy sector, luxury goods exports, and imports of steel products. The new curbs also freeze assets of more Russian entrepreneurs. The British bans target hundreds of Russian entities and individuals, including those close to President Vladimir Putin. Europe, along with the US, has imposed several rounds of sanctions on Russia since Moscow began its military operation in Ukraine. The measures have led to soaring prices of energy and other commodities like wheat. Moscow accuses the West of Russophobia and has barred several top U.S. officials, including President Biden, from entering Russian soil. European Union finance ministers warned sanctions being imposed on Russia over the conflict in Ukraine will severely damage the EU's economy for an unknown period of time. Fuel and food prices are set to rise even more sharply than they already have. Jerome Hughes is in Brussels.
As the cost of living in the EU goes through the roof, union members held a demonstration outside a meeting of EU finance ministers in Brussels on Tuesday. They want the bloc's leaders to provide more support for EU citizens who are being hit hard by the financial ramifications resulting from the conflict in Ukraine.
And it's also why we need to say that we need to stop this war, because it's affecting our workers, and our workers have already been affected with prices because of the COVID situation, and now we have to say stop this war and stop Putin in Ukraine.
Finance ministers have signed off on the fourth package of sanctions against Russia. 600 individuals have been targeted and Russian exports too. However, there is a very negative boomerang effect for the EU itself.
We'll see overall higher inflation, pressure on energy and food prices and market volatility. Rising energy and commodity prices, disruptions of supply chains, it all will have negative knock-off effect on consumer prices and on investment.
Russia, which is now the most sanctioned country in the world, has been removed from the so-called Most Favoured Nation clause relating to the World Trade Organization.
This major decision entitles the EU to increase customs duties at any moment on Russian products. As regards sanctions, all options remain on the table.
Finance ministers say 200 billion euro worth of loans are available to EU nations most impacted by the Ukrainian refugee crisis. Critics say if Western leaders had have shown more skill and compromise when listening to Russia's security concerns, the misery now being piled on Ukrainian citizens and the financial hardship being placed on EU citizens could have been avoided. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The Russian foreign minister says Moscow supports the full implementation and the quick revival of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, also known as the JCPOA. He made the remarks during a joint press conference with his Iranian counterpart in Moscow. Marina Kurtunova is in the Russian capital.
Tehran expects a good agreement to be reached in the near future in its talks on the revival of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, known as the JCPOA. This was made by Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian at a press conference following talks with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in Moscow. Amir Abdollahian said the delay in the negotiations could lead to the creation of good ground for resolving the remaining issues. He also said that Russia has not created any obstacles in the negotiations on the JCPOA revival, and that the Vienna talks are in no way connected with the conflict in Ukraine.
Russia does not create any obstacles to reaching agreements. There is no connection between the developments in Ukraine and the Vienna talks. And until the end of the negotiations and the achievement of a good, powerful and lasting agreement, Russia will be close to Iran and will support Iran to achieve this agreement.
Meanwhile, Sergei Lavrov said his country has received written guarantees from the United States that Western sanctions on Russia over Ukraine will not affect cooperation with Iran within the framework of the JCPOA.
We received written guarantees. They are included in the text of the agreement itself on the resumption of the JCPOA on the Iranian nuclear program. These texts provide reliable protection for all the projects and areas of activity envisaged by the JCPOA, including the direct involvement of our companies, specialists, including their cooperation on such a flagship project of our cooperation as the Bushehr nuclear power plant, in the context of all existing plans in this regard.
Lavrov also rejected claims that Russia has created an obstacle to negotiations in the Austrian capital, backing the quick revival of the 2015 agreement.
There have been no exorbitant demands from our side, and there are none. All our rights within the framework of cooperation with Iran on the projects that the JCPOA provides for are reliably protected. I have heard how the Americans are trying to accuse us every day that we are slowing down this agreement. That's a lie. The agreement has not yet been finally approved in some capitals, and the Russian capital, Moscow, is not among them.
Amir Abdollahian and Lavrov also discussed other issues, including the Ukrainian conflict and regional issues such as developments in Afghanistan, Syria and Yemen.
The foreign ministers, along with political and diplomatic issues, discussed economic affairs in order to neutralize the negative impacts and consequences of the U.S. and Western anti-Moscow sanctions through closer cooperation and rapprochement. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
A senior member of Yemen's Supreme Political Council says Saudi Arabia cannot be a mediator in a Yemen war. Mohammed Ali al-Houthi says Riyadh cannot be impartial as it is a perpetrator of war on Yemen. The top official was responding to a Reuters report of an initiative to hold talks between Yemeni factions in the Saudi capital Riyadh this month. The Saudi-based regional Arab bloc GCC is considering inviting the Ansarullah movement and other Yemeni parties for consultations in a UN-led peace effort. Saudi Arabia, along with some of its regional allies, launched a war on Yemen in 2015. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis, majority of them civilians, have been killed and millions more displaced in the incessant Saudi bombing campaign and blockade on Yemen. famine and starvation, and as a result, acute malnutrition. That's what the lives of hundreds of thousands of Yemenis are like today. The UN has warned the picture will even go grimmer in war-torn Yemen. Earlier in our news review program, we discussed the UN's warning and the root cause of the humanitarian crisis in the country. Take a look.
Hello and welcome to News Review, where we take a closer look at one of our day's top stories. Concerns are growing over the distressing situation of the Yemeni people. Now, the UN warns the number of Yemenis grappling with famine in the country is projected to jump fivefold this year. In a joint statement, three of the UN's agencies said the number of Yemenis facing acute food insecurity is expected to rise to over 160,000. The agencies labeled the sharp rise extremely worrying. The statement also referred to a five-level ranking of food security. According to the classification, Yemen is level five, which is equivalent to a catastrophe. Saudi-led war on Yemen has taken a heavy toll on civilians since 2015, with children bearing the brunt. The UN says over 2 million Yemeni kids are acutely malnourished. Joining me to discuss this story further, we have Hamza Karim, is a Yemeni activist and political commentator, joining us from Toronto, and Firas An-Najm, the manager of Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, joining us from Ottawa. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on this edition of News Review. Let me begin with Firas. Thank you for joining us, Firas. The numbers, the figures are extremely worrying. The thing is, 7 years of war and millions are facing starvation in this country. Children are losing their lives. According to a UNICEF report released, on Saturday last week, 47 children died just in 2022, and over 10,000 have been killed or maimed since the beginning of the Saudi-led blockade and war on Yemen. And yet, no one's doing anything. Why is that?
Best regards to Press TV staff and all viewers. I mean, it's very clear that these numbers are not accurate because the country is under a major blockade from all dimensions and areas. And the studies are not accurate, right? There's a lot more deaths than the numbers that we're reading here, right? And Yemen is the worst humanitarian crisis. This is quoted by the United Nations 2 years going into the war. We're going into the seventh year right now. In March 26, 2022, it'll be 7 years in this war, this gruesome, illegal, cruel war on the people of Yemen. We see that Saudi Arabia has a green light to commit any crime, commit any type of act they want inside Yemen. And that nobody's speaking really about it. Well, here and there, we hear sometimes, you know, a mere statement, a condemnation. But what is that going to really do? Has there been any penalties that were imposed on Saudi Arabia? Have they adopted any kind of measures that are truly going to get Saudi Arabia and the coalition to retract, to stop this war? No. And this is also because the United Nations is now just a tool for the U.S. and the British and the Israelis and their allies. You know what I mean? The United Nations is overpowered by certain governments and countries. And it's unfortunate like this, because right now, as we see all these sanctions that are being imposed against Russia and Putin as government because of a war that's only been ongoing for, 15 days? We're talking about a war for 365 days times seven. And a major blockade, and they have, we have it documented. The documentations are everywhere. The videos are everywhere that they have blown up hospitals, they have blown up schools, they have killed all kinds of infrastructures and human beings inside Yemen, and the Red Cross had to leave Yemen. Doctors Without Borders had to evacuate Yemen. So pretty much Yemen is in the worst situation ever. But yet, all we hear about is Ukraine, Ukraine, Ukraine all day on media, but then the Yemeni human beings are worthless to the world. And this is unfortunate that this shows us truly, it exposes the true nature of this biased media and these biased governments and these biased organizations that we're supposed to trust to bring justice to the innocent people and to respect international law.
First,
and it's unfortunate.
You. I will get back to you. Let's now turn to Hamza Karim. Hamza, welcome to Press TV. So what do you think about this? Why do you think the West is quick to react when it comes to Ukraine, but the war in Yemen has been going on for 7 years and nobody really cares?
To keep it short, I think this is hypocrisy at its best right now. What we're seeing on how the Western governments are reacting to what's happening in Ukraine and really showing all that care and solidarity with Ukraine and Ukrainian people. However, on the other hand, we see that for the past 7 years, there has been a systematic destruction for Yemen and its infrastructure. And unfortunately, the most segment that is really impacted by this is children. In Yemen, 50% of the population is composed of children under the age of 18. And I totally agree with what Firas said, which is, you know, these numbers are really underestimating the harm that has been caused by the Saudi collision on Yemen and Yemeni people. If you all remember, in 2018, Save the Children organization came out after the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, and they said that every 10 minutes a child dies in Yemen because they don't have access to food or clean water. After that, in 2020, the Food World Program director in Yemen came out and he said every 75 seconds a child dies in Yemen because of the blockade imposed by Saudi Arabia. And you know, it's very hard right now for them, for the children, to have access to food and water. So again, these numbers are really underestimating you know, the real harm that is has been caused in Yemen.
Gentlemen, I appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. I've been talking to Hamza Karim. He is a Yemeni activist and political commentator joining us from Toronto, and Firas and Najim. He is the manager of Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, joining us from Ottawa. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Recently, scientists announced that the REACT study, which randomly tests about 150,000 people across England each month to see how many are infected with coronavirus, will be scrapped at the end of March, and no further data will be collected beyond that point. We now present you an article written by Linda Geddes under the heading, Pandemic is Not Over, Ministers Criticised for Scrapping UK COVID Surveillance. In Britain, ministers have been accused of turning off the headlights at the first sign of dawn after scrapping nationwide COVID surveillance programs, with scientists saying it will almost certainly end up costing more money in the long run. Recently, scientists announced that the REACT study, which randomly tests about 150,000 people across England each month to see how many are infected with coronavirus, will be scrapped at the end of March, and no further data will be collected beyond that point. Funding is also being withdrawn from the Zoe COVID symptom study, the Siren and Vivaldi studies, which monitor infections in health workers and care homes, and the COMIG social contact survey, while mass free testing is due to end on 1st of April. The Office for National Statistics, ONS's COVID infection survey, which regularly samples the same 180,000 people to estimate what percentage of the UK population is infected, will continue. It comes as growing numbers of new infections in multiple countries led one expert to prompt speculation that Europe could be at the start of a sixth wave of COVID infections, partly driven by the stealth BA2 Omicron variant. Dr. Stephen Griffin, a virologist at the University of Leeds in England, said the decisions on COVID surveillance would slow the country's ability to respond and adjust to future waves or surges of infection, making the current reliance on emergency booster programs progressively less viable, and were at best short-sighted. Dr. Stephen Griffin added, "At worst, it is symptomatic of a policy-driven movement to ignore the fact that the pandemic is not over and that we remain in a highly dynamic situation with respect to immunity versus infection and virus evolution. This is about as far from following the science as you can get," adding, "Losing these programs will almost certainly end up costing more in terms of disruption than saved. It is a false economy and yet another example of short-term thinking." Stephen Reicher, a psychologist at the University of St Andrews in Scotland, said the decisions made no sense on public safety or public health grounds. Stephen Reicher added, "It is like turning off the headlights at the first sign of dawn. You can't see what's coming, and you don't know when it makes sense to turn them on again." Recently, the government announced that its Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies, or SAGE, would no longer regularly meet to discuss coronavirus. Stephen Reicher, who sat on the SAGE Behavioural Science Subcommittee, said the decision to stop funding these surveillance studies was far more significant than standing down SAGE. He said those scientists are still working and can reconvene quickly, but how can they work or know if they need to reconvene if the data isn't there? The ending of free mass testing on 1st of April could make the situation even worse. Dr. Kit Yates, a mathematical biologist at the University of Bath, said Boris Johnson's insistence that tests will be available for anybody to buy completely misses the point. Dr. Kit Yates added, "Many people in the United Kingdom will not be in the position to spend a significant portion of their budget on testing each week. Others will simply be put off by the cost of testing." Dr. Kit Yates added, "The consequence will be that testing drops significantly. People become less aware when they are infectious and consequently less able to take the personal responsibility that the government has been highlighting so vociferously in the aftermath of their removal of other COVID mitigations." According to the latest Office for National Statistics figures, the percentage of people estimated to have tested positive for coronavirus rose in England, Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland in the week ending 5th of March, while the percentage of infections compatible with the Omicron BA2 variant also increased across all countries. Austria, the Netherlands, Switzerland, Germany and many other European countries have also seen a sharp increase in daily confirmed cases since the start of March. Dr. Eric Topol, director of the Scripps Research Translational Institute in Loyola, California, United States, said the uptick could mark the beginning of a sixth wave of COVID infections in Europe, driven by a combination of the BA1 and BA2 Omicron variants, and the relaxation of restrictions in many countries. Dr. Eric Topol added, "There are definitive signs of a new wave starting throughout many countries in Europe, some of which are also showing increases in COVID hospitalizations. It is hard at this point to determine if the cause is reducing or eliminating restrictions, BA2's higher rate of transmission, or waning of immune protection from vaccines." Dr. Eric Topol added, "Right now is the last time that countries like the United Kingdom and United States should be cutting funding or abandoning any surveillance and testing measures. As much as we all would like it to be, the pandemic is far from over." Meanwhile, France will lift most of its COVID restrictions in coming days, scrapping President Emmanuel Macron's flagship vaccine pass and ending compulsory indoor mask wearing in schools and many public spaces, as the government vows to ease pressure on French people's daily lives despite a rise in infections. Less than a month before April's presidential vote, the French government has brought forward its promise to ease restrictions before the summer. From Monday, 14th of March, school children aged 6 and over will not have to wear face masks inside classrooms for the first time since September of 2020. Face masks will no longer be mandatory in shops, public services, or workplaces. But face masks will remain compulsory on all public transport, as well as at hospitals and for people visiting elderly loved ones in care homes. The Prime Minister, Jean Castex, conceded in an interview this weekend that there had been an upturn in cases like everywhere in Europe, but he said pressure on hospital emergency wards was going down and the BA2 variant of Omicron was more contagious but seemingly less dangerous. Prime Minister Jean Castex said, while the French government continued its strategy of easing restrictions, he strongly recommended people who are vulnerable because of their age or pathologies to keep wearing face masks in indoor spaces. The end of the vaccine pass means that for the first time since last summer, people no longer need to show a QR code to eat out in a restaurant, go to a cafe, work out at a gym, board a long-distance train, go to the cinema, or borrow a book from library. President Macron first introduced a health pass in July of 2021, making it compulsory to have proof of either vaccination, recovery from COVID, or a negative test to enter places such as museums, restaurants, and coffee shops. Although the policy led to some street protests throughout France, it had the support of the majority of the public in opinion polls and helped to push up vaccination levels. More than 1 million people made a vaccine appointment in the 24 hours after President Macron announced his first health pass last summer.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us listen to a thought-provoking saying from the Holy Prophet's vicegerent, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. A wise man first thinks and then speaks. A fool speaks first and then thinks.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to IRIB English Radio. And you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human beings and we are looking at their rights. And there is no one better to tell us about the rights of human beings than the commander of the faithful, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salamullah. We began looking at the letter written by Amir al-Mu'mineen to his commander, Malik al-Ashtar, when he sent him as a governor to Egypt. Now, we are looking in this letter and we're trying to derive all the human rights lessons and all the rules and regulations that need to be applied in humanity as a whole and in society for us to be a better people. Now, Amir al-Mu'mineen, when he's giving this letter to Malik, because Malik now is in a position of power, which means concepts like justice, concepts like freedom, poverty of people, the affairs of people, are all in the hands of the governor. People's right and their rights now are in the hands of their new governor. Now, how should a governor deal with his people? How should he maintain and provide his subjects and his people with their basic rights? So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, from here, he's trying to give him direct instructions of how to deal with people in terms of human rights. He says to him, develop in your heart the feeling of love for people, and it will be the source of kindness and blessings to them. Now, generally speaking, human beings, one of the main things that we have in our hearts, that we interact with one another, is based on love. Love itself and compassion and kindness, it's a moving factor to create a stable society and a stable community. Now, Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi says that kind of love, first and foremost, has to begin from authority itself. When the people realize that their governor or the authority that rules them is showing them love, kindness, and mercy, it's obviously not through words, rather through actions. I mean, how do I know that the prime minister or the president or the mayor or the governor of my city loves me through his actions? Because I can't get to him. I can't make a phone call and say to him, do you love me? I mean, it's nonsense. But when I see that he provides services for the city, he builds roads, he creates infrastructure, he helps try to eradicate poverty and ignorance and try to create education and healthcare and try to better the situation of people, then I do understand that this person has compassion, that human rights are being met. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he says to Malik, develop that love in your heart, where not just sit and say, well, I love my people. No, but show it to them in a form of actions. It means better their lives in a way that it is noticeable to them. So through that love, they can have love towards you as well by obviously being obedient to you. Let us take a break and then we come back.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Just before the break, we were looking at how Amir al-Mu'mineen instructing his commander Malik al-Ashtar to make sure that human rights are observed. And then he says to him, do not behave with them like a barbarian and do not appropriate that to yourself. Now, so either a governor or a person in authority, he shows love towards the people, obviously by showing them actions, by building for them, by giving them their rights, education, healthcare, and all the things that we mentioned, or vice versa. You see that sometimes when governments take place, in not only they do not provide for people, but they deprive people. So, for example, when a country or a system starts to create lots and lots of taxes, and they, for example, they bring up the rate of the currency high or the prices goes higher, then people suffer in return. They cannot live. They cannot maintain their livelihood. So Amir al-Mu'mineen says that's a barbarian act. When your people are suffering, when they cannot, you know, meet their requirements, when they cannot provide for their families, when they cannot educate their kids, when they cannot cure their sick, then that's the barbarian act. And we can see this throughout the world right now, where there are governments which are barbarians in their nature, where people are suffering. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he says, power, authority, it needs to show love in action by giving the people and not becoming barbarians. And then the Imam alayhi salam, he says, look at it from this perspective, that people themselves are either brothers in faith or equivalent in humanity. They're human beings. What gives me the right to come and take the rights of others and usurp them and take their money, take their land? Because the kings and the rulers at the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen, and even now governments, they come to people, either they tax them too much, they charge them too much taxes, or as some cases, they take their land, they take their property, they close down their factories, and which means that the essence of humanity disappears. When I take the right of someone else, then there is no humanity left in me, because the person I'm dealing with, either he's a brother in my faith, we share the same faith, therefore I have to give him extra love and extra care, or at least I should look at him as another human being like me. In the same way I want to live, he wants to live. In the same way I want life to be easier for me and my kids, he wants his life to be easier for his kids. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he clearly highlights that fact. And that should be the point of a human rights itself, that dealing with people, you either look at them as brothers in faith, which means you're good to them, or you look at them as human beings, and you should still be good to them either way. So in no case should we start to deprive people of their rights. And sadly, this is something that we are currently facing, is that we have systems in play that looks at people as servants, as machines, to create wealth for them while they enjoy the good life, and the majority of the people suffer, and millions of people are dying due to poverty and what have you. That should not happen. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he brings that to his commander, Malik al-Ashtar. Inshallah, we will continue looking at human rights in this letter in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله Cultural news Social news Scientific news Artistic news With the light.
Competition at stand-up paddleboard events is fierce, but competing on Europe's biggest underground lake adds another level of difficulty. One such race has been held in Switzerland as part of the seven-stage Alpine Lakes Tour. Some 60 paddlers have competed on the 300-meter-long underground lake on an illuminated course. Organizers named it the Bat Race because it was staged in a cave.
It's a great day because we are on an underground lake, and this only takes place here. There's nothing like this elsewhere, and really, the atmosphere is great because we are in the dark. We paddle without knowing where we are going. It's a really fun atmosphere.
Other athletes were excited about the setting, describing it as wonderful and magnificent. They said it was magical to see the trout deep underwater inside the cave. Others said they sometimes struggled to breathe, but all the participants agreed that it was absolutely fun.
Local fishermen have rescued an injured baby manatee on a bay in far southeastern Cuba. The fishermen are nursing the injured baby manatee with cow and goat milk mixed with coconut water. They discovered the injured manatee with gashes on his head and body in Maria del Portillo Bay near Havana. Upon arrival on shore, the fishermen recruited volunteers for a nearby farming village.
We were fishing along the shore when we saw the manatee coming. When it approached us, we realized it was injured. It had several wounds on its body, one on the head and two on the rest of the body. Between the two of us, we made the decision to take her to the port of Maria del Portillo, where the boats were moored. When we got there, the whole town was very surprised. Some people ran to help us, others ran to get milk. Seeing that it was small and knowing that it's a mammal, we decided to give it some milk. The people who have cows gave us cow's milk. Those who have goats gave us goat's milk.
Manatees are aquatic mammals akin to giant water-borne cow. The mammal is found in sheltered bays and estuaries throughout Cuba. Scientists say coastal communities could play a key role in protecting marine species and their habitats. Races, beauty contests, and a marvelous show. Here is everything you need to know about the first Qatar Camel Festival. Qatar kicked off its very first edition of the Camel Festival earlier this month at Lepsair, Doha. The festival features unique and high-value breeds for the public to enjoy. Camels from all around the region will also get to flaunt their posture to earn the title of the most beautiful camel or the highest value breed in the festival. But first, the whole lot should be judged.
Judging is based on the size of the camel's head, the length of the neck, and the beautiful appearance of the animal and its health status. Of course, judging is different for each group of camels. For example, in the case of camels that are black, the focus is on the size of the animal's head. But on camels that are white, the focus is on the beauty of the camel and the harmony of the body and the beauty of the animal. In addition, we have very experienced professional staff who will deal with the animal if it is artificially beautified.
To spike excitement and competitiveness in those who enjoy such shows, the country has allocated a whopping 47 million Qatari riyals for the lucky winners. The 45-day event will last until March 22nd and will include various competitions, including 115 local and international races.
In the streets of the Chadian capital city, an actor is bringing culture to impoverished neighborhoods by organizing readings of poetry and plays.
Culture should be accessible to all. If we want to have a wonderful world, a harmonious world, everyone should be focused on the same dimensions to be able to dream together. And without culture, we won't be able to initiate development. And to initiate this stage of development, we need to invite people to think together.
The actor does not have a fixed place to tell his stories. He performs in public spaces and says it is
his way of giving everyone the opportunity to discover and explore creativity. Among the activities Bonaventure organizes, one can name drawing with children and conducting acting classes. He believes music and theater bring other disciplines together, creating an avenue for enriching human connections. Residents, especially the children of the impoverished neighborhood, say they always look forward to Bonaventure's arrival. A first-of-its-kind selfie museum in the Central American country of Guatemala is gaining lots of attention from excited enthusiasts. The selfie museum is located in Antigua, Guatemala, and is made up of 40 rooms or scenarios. Each room is a recreation of a colorful theme. Wallpaper, wings, greenery, neon signs, and other props are all present to spark the interest of visitors. One room includes a levitating bed, and another is equipped with a spaceship. Other rooms have familiar scenarios of presidential offices and comic book characters for visitors to take photographs in. Several artists participated in creating the art illustrations. A zoo in Peru's capital city, Lima, is celebrating a rare hatching of endangered baby crocodiles. The Huachipa Zoo showcased three females and one male to the public on the World Wildlife Day. The four crocodiles were born in incubators as part of the conservation efforts for the reptile. This species is an American crocodile, which is on the endangered list of animals in Peru. Zookeepers say the black market and threats on their habitat have seen the crocodile population dwindle. The zoo regularly receives animals that were rescued from trafficking. Among those traits are tortoises, macaws, and monkeys.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The 2022 World Cup is reaching a fever pitch as hundreds of people line up at a shopping center in Qatar to take a picture with a trophy. The famous Golden World Cup trophy was unveiled during a ceremony at a mall in Doha, where excited football fans waited for their turn to see it. They were also given the option to take a selfie or have their photo taken professionally. While the competition is still nearly a year away, FIFA says more than a million tickets were requested within the first 24 hours after sales opened. The highest demand came from fans from Qatar, followed by Argentina, Mexico, and United States, among others. Bangladesh is reviving the ancient tradition of producing a historically renowned fine hand-woven fabric called muslin. With the help of the government, the trade is making a comeback. Now, a workshop has been set up in Dhaka where weavers are being trained in the ancient art. They say it took them months to master the craft, working with incredibly fine hand-spun cotton yarns. The weavers say it takes them 8 hours to spin just 4 centimeters. Some varieties of the fabric are so fine that an entire muslin sari could fit inside a single matchbox.
There was a myth about muslin that it was so delicate that it would pass through even a small ring. Look, it's true. There is space to squeeze in another piece of cloth through this ring as well.
Breathing life back into this ancient trade was not easy. Officials with a revival project say there was little knowledge about how this fabric was made. Plus, the rare cotton variant, which makes this fabric so expensive, was also lost. The precious fabric was the most extravagant of its era and popular in Mongol courts. It was also imported into Europe for much of the 17th century and transformed the style of the aristocracy there.
An art gallery in London, Tate Modern, is hosting an exhibition with a remarkable span of surrealist works. The exhibition, dubbed Surrealism Beyond Borders, features more than 170 artworks ranging from paintings and sculptures to photography and films. Works by more than 150 artists from over 60 years are on the display. The exhibit also has a wide geographical span and includes surrealist artworks from different countries. Some of the most prominent artists whose works are being exhibited include Pablo Picasso, Salvador Dali, and Ted Jones. The exhibition will run until August 9th. Impressive, creative, wonderful. That's how visitors describe the works of Vincent Hoch, a Dutch post-impressionist painter being displayed in an impressive art exhibition in the Argentine capital. Hundreds of Van Gogh's paintings are projected onto the walls of the gallery. The image bloom and ripple in front of the audience, creating a 3D-like and immersive experience. Van Gogh was one of the most famous and influential figures in Western art history of the 19th century. He is largely remembered for his impressionist style, a break from the old traditional art technique. He is also famous for his turbulent life, which was made for outlandish, emotionally charged paintings.
Students and staff gather for sizzling meat sandwiches as they signal their orders with their hands at a food truck in Pakistan's capital city of Islamabad. The Abbey Cow is no ordinary food truck parked on the campus of the Millennium Universal College. It's fully managed and run by staff with hearing impairments. At the beginning of the queue, a diagram shows simple phrases in sign language which customers use to order their food and communicate. The food truck is Pakistan's first mobile restaurant entirely staffed by deaf workers, providing an economic opportunity for them.
Having the startup here at our campus has been really fruitful. Not only have we created more awareness around the sign language amongst our students, but we've also created an inspiration for TMUC students to look up and pursue entrepreneurship as a career choice.
The project developer, Aisha Raza, says the majority of deaf youth end up unemployed and face inequality and discrimination. She says she wanted to create an opportunity for her brothers to economically thrive. The goal is to bridge communication gaps between the deaf and hearing communities and help remove language barriers. The food truck is the brainchild of a family where both parents and their sons are either totally or partially deaf.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Iran, as the prime victim of various sorts of terrorism by the U.S. and its proxies, has long endured with patience the assassination of its nationals and the damage to its economy, in the hope that the hostile elements would come to their senses to remove tensions and the unnecessary shedding of blood. It, however, seems the enemies of humanity are harebrained and not willing to give up their crimes and acts of terrorism unless